This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here with Money, Riches, and Wealth. It's the last day that we'll be on the air in 2016, Tommaso.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah, it is. Time flies. You know, 2017's coming. I'll be 60 years of age in 2017. It's hard to imagine.
It is.
You know, my mother always said when I was younger, time flies as you're getting older. I thought she was just crazy, you know, mother as mothers could be, you know, right. And so forth. Now I'm 60, and I'm thinking, you know, time flies faster when you get older, you know?
It does. It does indeed.
It
sure does.
So anyway, we're here with an open show again.
Yes.
We'll have a few guests on in January, but we're on another open show, 2016, the last one of the year. So you get to call in and ask questions you want and direct the conversation, 410-922-6680, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask a question, and it can be on any topic that you decide, elder care, income taxes, insurances, investments, estate planning, college planning, you name it. We can address it for you. You know, I give you an interesting one that we were working with a client today, and, you know, there were two young people that were living together.
Mm-hmm.
They got married this year, but last year they were just living together, and the one of them was not working, and they were going to school,
right?
But they had no income, and the other one was working, and but they both filed as single individuals.
Mm-hmm.
Big mistake, you know. If they would have filed as head of household with the one that was making money, claimed the dependency of the one who wasn't, you know, he would have gotten to be able to take the extra $4,000 exemption. He had claimed head of household, had lower, higher standard deduction, lower tax rates,
right.
And he probably would be able to take the lifetime learning credit for the other individual that he took the dependency exemption for,
right.
Who was in college that year.
Yeah, yeah. There's so many opportunities that, you know, people miss when they don't look at things from a comprehensive planning perspective.
Absolutely.
They did their taxes correctly.
Absolutely.
They just missed the opportunity.
They missed the opportunity, but we will be able to get it. You know, we'll be able to amend a return, take her off as an exemption on her own tax return, flip the exemption onto his tax return, and pick it up. And so, you know, and this is so common when we do a financial physical for a client. That we can actually, you know, we charge $1,500, or in their case, they're only a young couple, so we're doing an action plan, which is only $750.
Right.
And, you know, there's savings on this. Even if I can't take the lifetime learning credit, their savings is going to be in the $2,500 to $3,000 range. And if I could take the lifetime learning credit, it brings it to $4,000 to $6,000 of savings.
Yeah, it's amazing.
That's big bucks. And, you know, and then all the other things that we told them that they needed to fix and change and requote and so forth. And if, you know, who knows how much money they will save. But that's the difference when you understand the full depths of planning, and you know, when, you know, like a doctor, if I went and tried to do my own medical evaluation of myself, you know, I might be able to find some things and understand some things, but nothing like my doctor. My doctor is Dr. Jeffrey Magaziner. He's amazing. You know, I go in to see that guy, and he could tell me, he doesn't tell me what I have to do. He tells me what I think he thinks I should be doing. And now it's up to me. He's educated me. And it's my choice to decide. And that's what a good comprehensive advisor should do. Unfortunately, Tommaso, this industry is full. The majority of people in the industry are nothing more than sales-oriented. They're not trained to be doctors of personal finance. They're not fee-only. They're not independent. They work for insurance companies. They work for brokerage firms. And we believe that's not the way true comprehensive professional advisors are going to be in the future.
Right.
And people are going to seek out firms like ours more and more to say, I want somebody who's independent. I want somebody who's fee-only. And I want somebody who's trained to be a comprehensive advisor, and their only thing they're selling is the quality of their advice.
Yeah, yeah. It's a big difference. You know, I had a woman call me today, you know, just curious about what the physical was about and customized, you know, suggestions. And she was just focused on the investment side. And I was trying to enlighten her into how much more it is than just the investment.
Absolutely. Hold on. We've got a call here. Keith in Severna Park. How can we help you?
Hi, Drew. Happy New Year to you.
Well, same to you.
Mm-hmm. I have a question about Social Security. I love what I do for my work activities. I plan on working until I am 70. My wife and I are both 61. She'll be 62 in February. And she worked early in our marriage, but she has not worked in the past 30 years. Is it any benefit for her to take whatever she would get in Social Security at 62? And would that number increase once I would retire at 70?
Yes, and yes. She should claim at 62. In my opinion, and she will get a much larger check when you hit 70 and start collecting. And unfortunately, Keith, they took away some special rights for you last year when they changed 2015, when they changed the Social Security laws. There were some really cool things you could have done, but those are no longer available. And so, but as soon as you turn 70, my friend, she will get a much bigger check from spousal benefits than what she'll get from her own account. So that you're right on target. That's exactly the strategy you should be using for Social Security.
Mm-hmm. And I know that the stuff they took away was the take and suspend, which was the plan.
Yeah, you would have been able at 66 to file and suspend. And when you did that, she would have been able to start collecting your spousal benefits immediately at 66, her age 66, instead of having to wait for you to hit 70 when you're actually going to start taking the money.
Okay, so she just has to file for Social Security. It doesn't have any effect on what I need. I don't need to do any paperwork.
No, she's claiming strictly on her own account, assuming that she has 40 quarters of her own at 62 years of age.
And that's something you want to check. You want to check her Social Security statement if you haven't already.
Yeah, we get a statement. They tell her what she's going to get. So
Yeah, I'm under the same situation. My wife collects Social Security, but she's going to have to wait until I turn 70 to start collecting before she's going to get that huge bounce out of Social Security and spousal benefits.
Mm-hmm. And if she's turning 62 in February, how soon should we be applying for this?
You can apply right now. You can apply now and say, you know, when she turns 62, and I would do it online. Don't go into the offices unless you really just don't like doing things online.
Okay.
All right, and if you decide to ever work with us, we would do a Social Security maximizer just to make sure that everything is. There's nothing we're missing and so forth. So,
okay, Paul, here we go.
Consider a Social Security
Mike's
maximizer.
Hot. Yeah.
There's lots of little tricks still in Social Security that you got to make sure you're not missing. But I'm pretty sure that you're on target. All right?
Appreciate it.
All right, Keith, take care.
Enjoy your show very much. Happy New Year.
All right, take care. Happy New Year. We're going to traffic. We'll be right back at Open Show, Money, Rich, and Wealth. Take it away, traffic. Chris is still trying to butter up to us.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah. He's playing some music there.
Playing some good Christmas songs, yes, absolutely. So we're on an open show today. And lines are empty at this point in time, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask a question, like Keith called in and talked about Social Security, but you could call in and ask a question about anything you want.
Right.
So we were talking about taxes just a second ago.
Yeah.
And
well, there's 2 days left, Drew. There's two financial days left in the year. Right?
That's true. And if you want to do something.
What can people do in the next 2 days?
Well, you can give stuff away, you know, to charity.
Go to Goodwill, you know, and bring your bag of stuff. Itemize it if you can.
Or if you've been meaning to make a big charitable contribution to somebody, you know, instead of waiting until 2017 when taxes could be lower, you want to do it now in 2016. And if you have highly appreciated stock, that's something that you could definitely be doing right now in 2016. You know, you need to look and make sure that you've paid in enough estimated taxes for 2016. because yeah, you can make another estimated tax payment in January,
right?
And you have until January 15th. But if you make a larger payment in January than you did in September, June, and April, it doesn't count equally throughout the year. You're going to still get hit with some interest penalties.
Mm-hmm.
But if you could do a withholding from an IRA or a Roth account before the end of the year, then that's considered as equal throughout the whole course of the year. And so we do that a lot, you know, with some clients, just to make sure that if we think they're having a better year and we haven't hit the safe harbor, we can make some extra payments. And we just did that the other day with a big client of ours.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's lots of little things that you can think about in these last 2 days.
Yep.
And if you want to take a tax loss, let's say you had a big gain. We have a couple clients right now that have big gains. We had a client that sold a house. That was normally a house sale is tax free, but we had a client sold a house that was so valuable that they paid so little
for it,
you know, that they made the $3 million capital gain on it. You're gonna pay taxes on that one.
Yeah, yeah.
You're gonna pay big taxes on it too.
Right.
And so you want to harvest every single loss you can find anywhere to be able to minimize that capital gain.
Yep.
So you know, there's lots of things, but you do have to execute these things before the end of business on Friday, or else it doesn't count.
That's the important thing. There's certain things where 12/31, you know, is the demarcation line. So this year, that happens to be this Friday on the 30th, where you have to have things done. And then there's other things you can do, you know, prior to filing your taxes. And, you know, so there's the differences, and you point some of those out. Another one, you know, college savings plans. And there's actually some interesting things changing going into 2017, or some new programs that the Maryland plan is implementing that people should consider, especially if they're in the kind of the lower end of the tax brackets. You know, I've looked into that a little bit. They're going to give kind of an incentive for folks to open accounts next year and apply for a credit, you know, that's a little bit more than the credit they would get from deducting it on their taxes. They can't get both. But they get like a bonus up to $250 for opening an account next year, a new account next year. But, you know, for the higher income folks, you know, they can still do it this year. But for the lower, and when I say lower, it's still your 118, you know, 170, you know, folks is married.
Yeah, so, you know, that's a new thing you can do, and that's a good one. You know, if you want to contribute to a 529 plan for a deduction for 2016, you got to do it before Friday.
Right.
You know,
right.
It's got to be recorded by them by Friday that you made your contribution. So that's another good one that you can do.
Maryland plan, the Maryland 529.
Well, the Pennsylvania plan allows a nice deduction too, but you still have to make a contribution to a 529.
Yeah.
Now, Pennsylvania has a unique feature, and that is that in Pennsylvania, I can use any 529 plan in the country.
Yep.
In Maryland, I have to contribute to the Maryland 529 plan.
Mm-hmm.
Fortunately, it's a good plan.
It is.
The
T.
Rowe Price 529 is a good plan.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's nothing wrong with contributing to that.
Right.
Anyway, Tomasa, we're on an open show today. Our phone number is 410-922-6680 if you want to call in. There are no callers online. This is our last show of 2016. We'd like to hear from you. We'd like to answer your questions. And if you don't, you're going to have to just listen to us ramble on for the rest of the hour.
We might sing again like we did last week.
We could do that if we have
maybe
to.
Maybe
we scared
them away. People are afraid we're going to ask them to sing a verse.
Yeah, well, you know, I would never do that to anyone, Thomas.
Nobody's listening to last week's show, I guess.
So anyway, we're on an open show. If you want to call and ask a question, 410-922-6680. Anything you want to talk about, we can address. I'll give you another one that I see all the time. Okay, so let's say you're out there listening and you're in a 401k plan.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you're a young parent.
Right.
All right? So you're married and you have two children. And they're 10 years old and 5 years old, or 2 years old and 1 year old, or 6 years old and whatever. They're under 18 years of age. You got two children, or you have four children, whatever. And they're all minors, or some of them are minors. Okay? The typical thing they're going to do, Tom, is they're going to put down, my wife is primary and my two children are secondary. So little Johnny and little Joni are contingent secondary.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what happens if mom and dad die?
Mm-hmm.
God forbid.
Mm-hmm.
It happens. God forbid it happens. And now all of a sudden, Little Johnny and Little Joni show up at Fidelity or Vanguard, the 401k provider, and say, I'm here to collect my parents' 401k money.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, well, Little Johnny and Little Joni, you're only 10 years old. You're only 6 years old or whatever.
Right.
Well, you think they're going to set up an account with a 10 or 6-year-old? They can't. It's illegal.
Yep.
They're not 18. They can't sign a contract. No custodian is going to set up an account for your minor child. You don't want to put your minor children. Now, here's the big mistake people make. Well, if I don't put down my minor children, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll put down my brother or my sister, and they'll take care of the money to give to the kids. Well, that's a great idea, but you have to do it right. And here's the way you do it right. You say, my brother John, as custodian for Little Johnny or Little Joni under the Uniform Transfer to Minors Act in the state of Maryland to age 21.
Right.
That's the language you have to have in there.
Right.
You have to do this, and I don't care if they say, no, there's not enough lines in here, there's not enough space. I would insist, and they don't have the right to tell you no. They do not have the right to tell you no. So your contingent beneficiary, if you have a minor child as a contingent beneficiary, mm-hmm. you want to use this language. My, whatever, brother, father, mother, sister, as custodian for my child under UTMA, Uniform Transfer to Minors Account, UTMA, Maryland, to age 21. Very simple. Put that language down. End of the story. Now the money's protected for the child. Your brother, sister, mother, father, whoever has to take care of the money and will have to spend it on the child when the time comes.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Let's go to Mike in Herndon. Mike, how can we help you?
Hi. My family is working on some elder care issues with my mother. And so we've been getting a service to come in and care for her. My brother's been interested in thinking about us just going directly out into the marketplace to find skilled nurses to do this for us. And we were worried about a liability situation, so we were thinking of setting up an LLC in order to do that. But his concern was that he thought that if we did that, all of my mother's equipment and things that are used, like a lift chair, for example, would have to be listed as under the LLC. And that it would be good.
No, you don't want to do that. What you want to do, Mike, is really simple. Number one, you would be best to hire an agency who provides workers' comp insurance for the people that come into your house, okay? And you want to make sure your mother has good liability insurance on her home and so forth. So if you have workers' comp insurance and you have good liability insurance, you should be fully protected, and you don't need to be doing any of that fancy footwork that you're trying to do there.
Oh, okay.
So you get a good umbrella liability policy for $1 million so that if anything happens on the property and somebody tries to sue you for negligence, then you would collect against that policy. But if the person's hurt while helping your mother, you need a workers' comp policy, and either the company that provides them to you would carry the workers' comp policy, or you would go out to your insurance agent and say, I need a workers' comp policy for a household domestic helper, employee. And we do it all the time. People hire nurses to come in their house or helping hands or whatever to come in their house and help their parents. Either we want to make sure that the agency we hired them from gives you a certificate of insurance to prove that they're carrying workers' comp on their people, or we go out and get our own workers' comp if we're bringing an individual into the house to work for us.
Okay.
There's one other thing you have to be concerned about. If you bring somebody into work for you and you spend $2,000 a year on them and it's just John or it's Jane and she's just working and helping you out take care of your mother, you have to be concerned about Schedule H, which is the federal government's income tax requirement when you have a household employee. And that's if you spend more than $2,000, you need to file a W-2, and you need to pay half of their Social Security wages on that W-2 for that individual. So it's pretty easy to do, and you don't need to go a lot of this fancy stuff, but it is important.
All right, Paula, here we go. Mike is hot.
It would be my mother's taxes then that would have to be.
That is correct. It's your mother that's hiring her, and it's your mother's tax return that would file the Schedule H and so forth. Now, I will admit that there's a lot of people out there that don't do the Schedule H. You know, I'm just telling you that that's not right, but there's a lot of people that don't do it. Matter of fact, you see it all the time. Meg Whitman, I think, lost the California governorship when they came on and said she was hiring somebody, wasn't filing the Schedule H, and so forth. So happens all the time. But the real key is you got to get the workers' comp insurance. That's a no-miss situation because you don't want to even hear what could happen to you if that person's hurt on your property. All right, Mike?
All right. Yes, that's great. Thank you very much.
All right. I got to go to traffic. I'll be right back with Jerry or Judy. Judy in Millersville. Take it away, traffic.
75% of adults agree they could benefit from advice and answers to everyday financial questions from a professional. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consult. We strive to serve as a leader in educating the public on personal finance topics through our Financial Pulse and Consulate Journal. For these publications and learn about our personal financial management services, visit our website at drewtig.com, drewtig.com, and follow us on Twitter at the FinCon for educational updates.
And we're back. Money, Riches, and Wealth. We are on an open show. And so if you want to call in and direct the conversations, you can feel free to call in 410-922-6680. We still have Judy on the line. We'll go to her real quick because she's been holding a while. Judy, how can we help you?
Hi. I'm calling you about a durable power of attorney for health care that I have for my 92-year-old mom.
Okay.
I just want to make sure that I'm clear on how to use this document just in case there were a medical emergency for mom. I just want to make sure that her wishes are abided by the medical community. So I'm looking for some tips from you.
Okay, so first and foremost, I would suggest you, where does mom live?
She lives in Glen Burnie.
I mean, does she live in her own house, or does she live in your house?
She lives in her own home.
By herself?
No, she has a partner that lives with her.
Okay. So you want to have the advance directive that you have. That's a good thing, okay? So that advance directive, and your name, the healthcare agent, right?
Correct.
So you want to make sure her personal physician has it. All right,
okay.
That's number one. Number two, any other health providers that she sees on a regular basis. So if she has a cardiologist, you want to make sure that they have it, or if she has a pharmacist, you want to make sure they have it.
Okay.
But the other thing you want to do is a MOLST agreement. You ever heard of a MOLST agreement?
No, I have not.
MOLST means Medical Orders of Life-Sustaining Treatment, okay? So, you know, let's say, you know, even though in your advance directive it might say what her desires are for life-sustaining treatment, the MOLST agreement is a much more powerful document, in especially in an emergency situation. So let's say your mother had a situation where she were to not be responding and not breathing and so forth, and 911 was called in, okay? If she had a MOLST agreement that says, look, I don't want life-sustaining treatment, then that MOLST agreement would dictate those emergency responders not to resuscitate. If, on the other hand, it's strictly in your advance directive, they will not wait for you to show them the advance directive. They will immediately resuscitate and so forth. And so most seniors who do not want life-sustaining treatment and that kind of stuff will post it on a refrigerator or something like that in their home where it's easily accessible and easily visible, so that if there was a call for emergency in the house, they would be able to see that, and they would not do life-sustaining treatments, you know, because a lot of times when a senior does get into that situation where they don't respond, they may be able to resuscitate them, but the quality of their life could be dramatically different.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, you have to make that decision, but the MOLST agreement is definitely something I would consider. And anytime you have to respond to an emergency situation where you're going to a hospital, make sure you have a copy of that available to you.
Okay, and so you can use a copy. You don't necessarily have to have
No. You do not need to have an original, and there should be no doctor. Matter of fact, we post a lot of our legal documents for our clients into what we call an electronic vault so that they could just go to the hospital with their iPhone, connect to our vault, and pull their document out on their iPhone and say, here. Here it is. Here's mom's document, da-da-da-da-da.
Wow.
So there's lots of ways. There's lots of ways you can do it. You can even just post it yourself into a Dropbox or something, and that way you can just have your iPad and just pull it up if you need to. But, you know, having a paper copy is more than sufficient.
Super. Perfect.
And just make sure it's signed properly, and I'm assuming a lawyer did that for you.
Yes, because we had the will and, you know, personal power of attorney. We've done all of those.
And I would make sure that with that advance directive that I would have the lawyer's name and phone number available on that document, that if for any reason you got any kind of pushback from any kind of doctor, you could immediately just recall that person's name and phone number and contact them immediately if it were business hours.
Perfect.
All right?
Perfect. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right, Judy. You have a great new year.
You too.
Good question. All right. We're on an open show, 410-922-6680. And at the next break, Chris told me he was going to play the song O Come Emmanuel. Didn't you, Chris? Chris is like, I don't even know that that song's in our music box,
yeah,
you know?
He's searching.
And so, but he's going to have to search for the next couple minutes until we have to take our next break. But we're on an open show, 410-922-6680. And Judy's question is a great one, too, you know? You know, a daughter in a situation without an advance directive in the state of Maryland has some kind of standing. In other words, you know, the doctors are going to listen to a daughter. But let's say you have a daughter, a son, and another son,
right,
okay?
Right.
And you've chosen the daughter to be the one that you want to. Well, if you didn't have that document, the daughter would be just one of three people that the doctors are going to listen to.
Right.
And if there's a disagreement amongst those three people, then the doctors are going to do whatever they want to do.
Right.
And you have no choice. So by doing the document, when you have more than one child and you want one specific one to make that decision for you, you need to choose them. And if you want, if you have two children that you think get along exceptionally well, you can make both of those children jointly or severally so that they can work together. And you know that they're very compatible. And they're going to work together, so I don't have to worry about anything, and I can just make them jointly and severally. So whichever one can be available, they'll be the ones that'll be able to handle that for you and so forth. So, I mean, you know, there's lots of great ways to deal with, you know, a lot of things that you need to think about, but it's important to have these documents.
Yeah, and I would say, you know, from my experience as well, it's helpful. I found it helpful to build a relationship with those doctors.
Oh, absolutely.
So they knew who I was and, you know, and they knew the documents were in order and what the directions were so that before you get to a crisis situation, you know, that's kind of been established to some degree.
Sure.
And then it makes it easier to, when you have to make decisions.
Absolutely. Well, Thomas, you're going to have to hold on. I hope you will. We'll be happy to answer your question when we come back. But right now, I have to take my last break of 2016. Take it away, traffic.
Listen every Sunday from 6:05 to 6:20 a.m. for...
Okay, Paula. Thank you.
All right. See you tomorrow.
Yep. See you tomorrow.
Jude is the patron saint of despair and hopeless cases. Join us in prayer every Sunday from 6:05 to 6:20 a.m. on WCBM.
Personal finance has become a major area of stress due to the increasing dangers and complexities of the global economy. Personal financial management is a comprehensive approach to to combating these issues, and the financial physical is the first step. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate, an independent fee-only firm. The financial physical begins with an objective analysis of your personal finances and ends with a plan to help achieve your goals. Experience the difference of the financial physical and learn how personal financial management can revolutionize your financial well-being. To learn more about the financial physical and the other services we offer, call us at 410-823-SAVE. That's 410-823-7283. Or the easy way to remember that, 410-823-SAVE. Or visit us online at DrewTig.com. That's DrewTig.com. One of my absolute all-time favorite Christmas carols.
Now, who was the artist there? Do we know?
I have no idea.
Neil
Diamond. Oh, wow. So, you know, this is one reason why I wanted this song to be played is because I'm very disappointed in what the United States is doing. And that speech from John Kerry today, it was just heartbreaking to hear the words that he spoke.
Mm.
And so, you know, I'm one to say, bless Israel, bless the children of Abraham, and the United States should stand firmly behind Israel at all costs. And I'm very disappointed in our country, but, you know,
Change is coming.
Change is coming. America's going to be great again, Tom. Anyway, Tom in Denton, how can we help you?
Yeah, he'll be leaving the swamp pretty soon. Dynamite show.
How you doing, sir? What can we answer for you?
Yeah, I'm collecting survivor's benefits.
Okay.
I'll be 64 in August.
So your wife passed away?
Yeah, 99.
Okay.
And I started collecting at 60.
Okay.
Now, when I start collecting my Social Security, hers drops off.
Yes.
I do not collect hers no more.
That is correct. But you keep in mind, the beauty of this is, Tom, that none of your benefits are reduced because you took your survivor's benefits.
Okay, another quick question.
Yeah.
Two stepchildren.
Yeah.
46 and 47.
Okay.
They don't have my legalized last name.
Okay.
Is there any way I leave my Social Security to them when I sweat?
Are they disabled?
No.
No. Then the answer is no.
Okay. Well, you answered my questions.
Yeah. Now, are you working now?
No, I haven't been working for a few years.
Okay. So.
I'm not collecting no disability, no SSI, nothing like that.
Okay.
None of that stuff.
All right. So, you know, and your Social Security is definitely more than your wife's was?
Say what?
Your Social Security will definitely be more than what your wife's was?
Yeah, correct, right.
Okay, so you don't want to stop collecting your wife's Social Security until you're 70 years of age. The 2 months before you turn 70, go in and change to your own retirement account. Unless for some reason, Tom, your health wasn't good. Is your health good?
Well, it's half and half, but that's why one of my main questions was if my health was bad.
Right, if your health was bad, if you didn't think your life expectancy was going to make it too long, then, you know, I might go in and collect your own benefit at 66 and get the boost in Social Security at 66 rather than to take it and wait till 70 when, you know, God forbid something happened to you before you turn 70, you'll never get any of yours.
Yeah, but you're not talking about the big increase.
I don't know. I don't know what your increase is.
To 70. Right.
What'd you say?
Not talking about a big increase.
You're talking about a huge increase between 66 and 70. It's a 32% increase in your Social Security benefit in just that little four-year period of time.
Okay.
So if you were going to get $1,500 a month, you'll get $2,000 at 70. That's a pretty big increase, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
So, you know, again, if your life expectancy is diminished to some degree, I go collect at 66.
Mm-hmm.
If you think you're relatively healthy and you're going to make it to 80 or so, I'd wait until I'm 70. But I don't know your full number, so I'm just giving you generalizations here. All right, my friend?
Okay, happy New Year.
All right, same to you, my friend. Take care.
Thank you, too, Tom.
Hey, there you go, Tom.
There you go.
You know, no, people usually call and say, Drew, you know, and that's somebody actually said something direct to you.
Well, he sounded like he might have been from my hometown, you know.
He did sound like he was from the land of whatever.
the Yankees.
No, Tom. There's nothing good about any New York sports team since 1969. There's not been a single New York sports team that's even worth talking about. Okay. The Jets, the Knicks, the Mets, the amazing Mets. The Mets, none of them. They're just not worth talking about. So,
okay.
In case you get the idea that I'm still spiteful, bitter from 1969, you're right.
All right.
You're absolutely right. I was a young kid.
Yeah,
1969. I was only 12 years old.
Very impressionable.
It was incredibly impressionable. Anyway, we're here on an open show, 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask a question, we do have Lori in Glen Burnie calling in, and we'll just go right to her question. You don't even have to fill that out there. Lori, did I get her? Oh, there we go.
He's talking.
Lori? He's still talking to her. Oh, he's talking to her. Then we'll keep talking.
All right, well, we got 4 minutes left in 2016.
Yeah, what do you want to talk about?
Well, we got to talk to Lori there, but we also have to talk about, you know, it's New Year's resolutions, and I know on New Year's Day or Eve, my wife's going to ask about that. So after we talk to Lori, we got to wrap up with that.
Lori, how can we help you?
Hi. Yes, I wasn't sure if you can assist when it comes to income tax questions.
Oh,
I'm a CPA.
He's the master.
So maybe that'll
help.
He's
Mr. Income Tax.
Go ahead, Laurie.
Oh yeah. I went through a loan modification back in 2013.
Okay.
And it was approved finally. It took years with Bank of America. And then I received a form having to related to that year that was approved and done, something about a refund that I got on my 1098 of $17,000, and it, which then got a letter from IRS saying that I owe $2,000 because that adjusted what I made that year or something, when it wasn't really a refund. It has something to do with the loan modification finalizing or something.
Yeah, I'm not sure what exactly they sent you, you know, because, you know, when you had a loan modification, did they didn't reduce the balance of the loan at all, did they?
Oh, yes, they did. They did reduce the loan, the monthly amount and the rate.
But they didn't reduce the face amount that you owed them. And even if they did, at that time, 2013, there would have been no income taxation for the forgiveness of debt, because that was your personal residence, I'm assuming, right?
Yeah, so it's like box number three on the, it was on 2014 tax form from Bank of America, but when I reached out to Bank of America, they said that it wasn't a refund per se, it was a, oh gosh. It was in relation to mortgage modification that I was approved for, and it said...
And they're saying that it was taxable income to you?
Yeah, I think that's why IRS is thinking, because they had to put it somewhere, as they said from Bank of America on their explanation to me.
As far as I know, if it was your personal residence, should not have created any taxable income. We had a lot of clients that we saw, you know, loan modifications and so forth done for, but it shouldn't have caused any taxable income. I would love to see that form and what the IRS is saying to you to be able to answer your question in more detail.
Yeah, they sent me forms to sign, and they want me to sign something about a tax increase, and I'm like, I had to fax them this week and said, wait, now, I don't want to sign this when I...
No, I wouldn't. I would. Do you? Who does your tax return?
Usually me. I do it through TurboTax.
TurboTax. There you go. Mm-hmm. So what I would do is call up the IRS and talk to them and say, you know, look, I just did a loan modification. How can I create taxable income under that situation? I don't know what Bank of America is saying. I didn't get anything out of it. I didn't, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And they should, you know, unless they're saying that They gave you interest back from the past. In other words, they gave you a refund for interest that you had already prepaid them, but they were retroactively going back on that. Now, under that scenario, if you took that interest as a mortgage deduction, that would be a recapture.
Yeah, and there was a case back that Bank of America was had an issue with this of having faulty 1098s. So
yeah,
you need to look into that a little deeper.
I wouldn't accept it, Laurie. I'd fight it, and I think you'll win. All right, I got to run, unfortunately.
Okay. All right, thank you.
That's a good question. Unique, not had that. Yep. Anyway, this is the end of the year, 2016, for Money, Riches, and Wealth, but we'll be back in 2017.
Yes, we will.
And this is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.